Hello again, my friends, and welcome to the show. On behalf of Disciple of City, I'm Todd Carlton, and this is the Toddcast. Friends, we are now on YouTube. Subscribe and hit the notification bell so you can be informed of when the latest episode drops. We are uploading new episodes and previous ones all the time, so check that out. We're also on 18 different streaming platforms, and share this with your friends, and let's get these great stories of Jesus out there. You can also check out our website at thetoddcast.ca. There's a direct link in there to the latest episode, and we'll be uploading some behind-the-scenes footage on there soon. This episode today, friends, we are recording at the Behold Conference in Peterborough, Ontario. And so our whole staff is out there today with us. A special thanks to executive producer Caden Carlton and Toddcast Media Relations, Sheila Juti. My guest today on the show is Danny Mackay. He flew in from Manitoba to be with us, and he is the president of a ministry called Equip Canada. And he is going to share with us his story and what his ministry is all about. Let's check it out. Danny.
Todd.
How's it going, man?
Dude, I am very well. I would say I'm doing well.
That's good. It's so good to see you. You know, been wanting to do this podcast with you for so long, but because you're such a dear friend, man, I really wanted to do it in person. So I'm glad that we jumped on this opportunity at the Behold Conference.
Yeah,
to have you here.
It's going to be such a good week, man. I'm super thankful for you and the amount of encouragement you have been in my life for a long time. Like, our journey goes back quite a ways to just like, hi, I'm Danny. Hey, I'm Todd. You know, back in Peterborough many, many years ago. And to watch where God has taken both of us to this point is just awesome. And so I'm just super thankful that you're in my life. And I'm thankful for you and what you do.
Danny's trying to make me blush. The truth is, thank you. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
Danny, very instrumental actually in the development of Disciple of City, because Danny first came out when we did our first event here, and teaching the tools and stuff, and you and your team were actually really inspirational and encouraging to getting Disciple of City off the ground to where it is. So,
Yeah, I feel like I was the delivery truck driver and just dropped off the materials, and you guys built this incredible thing of Disciple of City, and it's gone all across Canada and all around the world. So really, like, all I did was drop off the materials, you know. Like, I just went from the factory to you guys, like, here's some material, you know. And you guys just like, oh, okay, yeah, and just took it all apart and did, you know, built just such an incredible ministry.
Well, and then that's what we want to do too, right, is just take that to others and have them, you know, experience those tools and just get out and share the gospel and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, bro, there's so much going on in your life with the ministry, with the travel to Africa and stuff like that. But man, can you just like really share the moment for you where Jesus became real? Like, even if you know, people grow up in the faith and believe, but when Jesus actually became real to you.
Yeah. Well, man, I wasn't, raised super religious, you know, like our family, I would say we would attend church from time to time. My dad, you know, grew up in a very sort of ministry centered home, because my grandfather was the moderator of the Presbyterian Church of Canada. So he was a big deal. He was speaking, traveling all around the world. But, you know, for a while there, my dad got away from it. And so, when I was born, you know, my sister and I, we weren't really, you know, my dad wasn't really living it out as much then. And so, you know, I was just this wild kid. You know, I was born what I call with the spiritual gift of ADHD. And, you know, I was just in and out of trouble all the way through junior high and high school, got into alcohol and drugs, and just, there was so much hopelessness and anger and pain and confusion and lostness in my life. And I remember having this conversation with this guy one night about, you know, God, death, heaven, hell, you know, Satan, you know, is it all real? And I remember this like little spark of like, I think I need God. Like there was this hunger to know God that, that really started in my life. And so I decided to go and talk to one of the religious leaders in my town. And I actually saw him walking down the street. You know, he was easy to recognize. He had the robe and the everything. And I'm not picking on any denomination, because you know I know all kinds of amazing people who love Jesus in all kinds of denominations.
Yeah, just recognizable.
Yeah, and so I asked him like, "Hey, how do I make peace with God?" Like, that's all I wanted to know, man. I was like, how do I make things okay between me and God? How do I get out of this hopelessness and know that I'm going to heaven and not hell? How do I break out of all this pain and confusion? Where is God in it all? And how do I do it? You know, that was all wrapped up in the one question. I'm just curious, man, how do I make peace with God? And he talked about, you know, all these different things that I could do, very works-based, and that little spark of hope just went out. And so 2 days later, I actually ran away from home. I stole a car, took off, and I thought I would get to BC, get on a boat and get a job and then just go and see the world. I was 17 at this point. And, but in that car, there was a backpack that I started to rummage through, and in there was a book that was an outreach to teenagers. It was called Stairway to Hell by Rick Jones. Mm. And it was all about how to make peace with God, you know?
The question that you asked.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, so I was like immediately, without even, you know, just kind of quickly looking through it, I was like, I gotta read this. And so I wound up turning around and going back home, and I read that book, like half of it the first night, the second half the second night. And for the first time in my life, I heard the gospel. You know, first time I'd understood that God made us and that we'd fallen and that, you know, we were separated from him and we were headed to an eternity without him, but God didn't want to leave us there. So he sent his son, Jesus, who came down, wrapped himself in humanity, walked amongst us, died on the cross, paid the price for our sin, resurrected, seated at the right hand of God, and is opening the door. And, man, like the way the guy described the crucifixion made me understand how far God was willing to go to redeem us. And I felt, for the first time in my life, I felt loved. I felt like I had value. And I just wanted to run through that open door to his arms. And so I did. I got down on my knees, and there was a prayer you could pray to, you know, kind of receive Christ and turn from sin and, you know, all that. And I just broke. You know, I just wept. I remember burying my face in that book and just praying that prayer to Jesus. And, you know, it was August 15th, 1991, at 3:30 in the morning, number 9 Oak Street, Stonewall, Manitoba. You know, I know the exact spot in my mom's house. She still lives there. And every once in a while, awesome, I love to go back there and just kneel down in that exact spot and say, this is where you found me. You know, so that began awesome. My journey.
That question that you had sounds like it came really deep from within you.
Yeah. I was so aware that I was broken, that I was lost, and that I had nowhere to go. There was no safe spot. There was no shelter in this world. There was no, I didn't feel like I had true friends. I didn't feel like anybody really loved me or cared about me. And you know, like it was such a hopeless, you know, there's a whole other level. There's feeling unloved, but then there's feeling unlovable. And that's what I felt. And so when I encountered Jesus there, it absolutely transformed my life. He transformed my life, and everybody could see it. I started to share the gospel before I even knew what evangelism was. I just, I, like, it's like everybody needs to know this, you know, and it's just, it's never stopped from the very next day telling one of my best friends to telling all my friends to telling my entire high school to all of a sudden understanding what there's Bible college, there's ministries, there's organizations that do this. There's unreached people. There's people on the planet who don't know. And it just began the journey for me into what I'm doing today.
And, you know, that's a really interesting thing about it, eh, is that like there's a lot of things in life that we experience and we want to share it with some people, but only if there's enough of that thing for us.
Right? Yeah.
But whereas when people come to faith like that, that's immediate response. I just want to, everybody needs to hear this, even strangers, right?
Totally.
You want to share it with strangers as opposed to other good things that you find that you want to share with family and friends of people you love.
Yeah.
But this desire to you know, share with everybody.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things we see on the missions trips to, you know, all these unreached people groups, whether it's up in, you know, the mountains of Nepal or in the jungles of the Amazon or in the deserts in the Kalahari in Africa, like the places we go, what we see as a absolute normal pattern, like expected pattern, is that when people receive Christ, their immediate question is, how do I take this to my village, to my family? I need to, it's like there's an urgency of sharing it right away, which is why the gospel is spreading so fast in other parts of the world. It's really cool to see. They don't have to be convinced or pushed or prodded, you know, much like us in the West. It's like, ooh, I don't know if I can do that, you know, but whereas there, it's like, there's such an urgency and a concern because of the interconnectivity of families and communities and villages that they immediately, they embrace us, the messengers, then they embrace the message, and then they embrace the mission.
Yeah.
It just, it's all one and the same. So for me, that was true. Like I learned many, many months later about missions and evangelism and the call to be the hands and feet of Christ. I didn't even know that, but I was already like
doing the stuff.
Yeah. I just wanted to, man. I was absolutely ridiculous with it. You know, I would stop people at gas stations. Anyone I was talking to within 30 seconds, I was onto the gospel whenever I met someone. Like it just, and it still is like that. I sit beside someone on a plane, I immediately am thinking, oh, how am I going to get into the gospel with this person? You know, like it's just, it never stops.
I know that one.
Mm-hmm.
I do that same thing.
I know. I see that in you. I love that.
Danny, there's so many great things. Like you've been Africa, and I know most recently Botswana, but crazy places in the Amazon and stuff. But so I'd love for you to share a little bit about that. But how did you start in like full-time ministry? Like what drove you to, because a lot of people, you know, work and do ministry as well, combining.
Yeah.
But what drove you? Well, I know what drove you, but
yeah.
How did that begin for you saying, you know what, I just want to do nothing else but this? How'd that start?
Yeah, that was a big jump. I think one of the you know, things that often happens is we take like a paid role. So I started out, you know, after Bible college, working at a Bible camp, you know, for the summer. And they had like, you know, super, just like a little honorarium kind of gift every week, you know, a little bit. And but man, I was hooked. And then I learned that you could stay on year round. And so I did that, went back and started working at camp year round, and started out as like a caretaker, cleaning toilets, you know. And I did that for 4 years. I mean, when I came out of Bible, this is after Bible college. And when I was in Bible college, I was like, I'm the next Billy Graham. Like I was just coming out of Bible college, going to kick open those doors and just get out there and preach the gospel to the whole world and fill stadiums. And God's like, how about you go clean some things? And, you know, of course, you know, I've thought, well, this will be temporary and stuff, but you know, you start getting into the fourth year and you're like, how long, oh Lord? You know? And, but it, you know, in those times, you know, being way off in some far corner of the camp, cleaning some bathroom, you know, I'd be in a stall and all of a sudden God would just like, just speak to me and give me this vision for nations and unreached. And I could picture, I could taste it, and it would, his presence would surround me like this sense of being sent. And I remember a couple times I had to like put the mop down and just literally get on my knees in a bathroom and I would just weep in worship, and start interceding for the nations. And so I knew something was coming, but you know, when you grab that mop back and you finish up, you're like, I don't know how that's going to happen. And, you know, and then for me, this, I mean, everyone's journey is going to be different, but for me, it, you know, started and then, you know, I was asked to lead worship and I knew like four chords and three songs. I mean, if you know those four chords, you can lead like 200 worship songs. So
you could also probably have a successful rock and roll album.
Yeah. Which we, so this went from like this nervous, you know, worship leader to all of a sudden, you know, I'm on the radio and we're opening up for some big bands. And then we get invited by Youth for Christ to tour New Zealand for like 6 months, and Tony Campolo, we're opening up for him, you know, we're the worship team traveling with him. And it like, it just started, you know, and lots of leaps of faith and lots of sacrifice. There are times I've sold a home, gave up, you know, those things led to like, you know, being a youth pastor at a Christian school, you know, it was paid. Right. And then, I, you know, God was speaking to me. And so I joined World Vision and all of a sudden I'm traveling across the country and I'm on tour with like the Newsboys, not as an artist, but like as a speaker, you know, to share the gospel across the country. And all this while, all while doing all these different ministries, I'm like, Lord, but what about the unreached? When is that dream? Those times when I wept with you in that bathroom stall, like when will that come to pass? And, you know, and then one day, you know, God just met me in church. I was working with World Vision and he just met me. His presence just filled me. And I had a really good national role, corporate card, salary, benefits, all of that. And he was like, get ready. Like it's coming.
Wow.
And it was literally like 3-4 weeks later, I met Jeremy Dorton from I Am Second. And realized they were mobilizing all amongst unreached people and missions and all that kind of stuff. And I realized God was calling me now. And so, but I was going from a salaried corporate card, like I was saying, to a support based, like raising your own support, like going out and asking people to help support you. And so that was a massive leap. And I stood at that cliff. And, you know, it's like you have to step off the cliff, and as you're stepping and you expect to fall, God like puts a board under your foot, you know, and you're like, okay, you're taking another step, and then he puts a board under your foot. And, it was super, super crazy. And so sold a house, moved up to a camp that, you know, was going to help us. And God just started opening doors. People started coming on board. People we didn't even ask that just were like, hey, felt the Lord telling us to do this for you. You know, people donated a vehicle. We had a house that was donated rent free for as long until we got our support up and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we just started on the journey and it's never stopped. You know, we've just trusted God for everything. There's months that are lean, months where it's like, wow, that was unexpected. And we just keep going.
Well, and now you have your own ministry.
Yeah.
Equip Canada.
Yeah.
Which we'll leave in the description for the podcast so people can check that out and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just come. I didn't know about that touring and speaking and with the bands and stuff. So that's really, really cool. I know that, you know, you've done a lot of really what a lot of people would say, like radical trips into the Amazon. In fact, I'll say this now, dude, you will have to do actually another episode because these conference episodes are a little shorter than we usually do.
But yeah.
I'd love to do like a whole episode with you of just exploring reaching the lost in the Amazon and these tribes and stuff. But yeah. can you just share about your most recent trip to Botswana and where you went there and what that was?
Sure. So, we're working within Botswana, there's a tribe, there's a bunch of tribes, but there's one or two in particular that are the least reached in that entire region of Africa. Like there's almost no missionaries, nobody going, not even locally within Africa or Botswana, heading there. So, there's one tribe called the Basarwa, and they're very nomadic, live off the land. If you've ever seen the movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy, that's Basarwa. And, they're just the
dated,
most,
you just dated you, me, and
I know,
a
man.
Bunch of the listeners and viewers.
Yeah. Well, I hope it comes back. 'Cause that was a really fun movie, man. I loved it. But, so we made contact with them. We met a guy who was doing very minimal work amongst them. And he introduced us to the need. And so we started going. And on this last trip, this was our third trip into Botswana. And we're going again in April next year. But we get there and both our translators bailed. One about 4 days before the whole team was leaving. Well, the whole team is only four of us, four dudes from Manitoba. And one guy pulled out. So I was like, okay, well, at least we got the other guy, you know? And then he just ghosted us the day we showed up in his village to pick him up. We had been talking for a year, ghosted us. Just no response. Can't find him. He's gone. Like all day, you know, we're just like, well, I guess. So we're like, let's keep going. So we carry on and we're like just four white guys in a 4x4 heading across the Kalahari Desert. We drive like 9 hours down this sand road to get to the tribe. No context, no contacts. We don't speak the language. Everything is like not going according to plan, but we're going anyway. It's like, we're just going to trust God, you know? It was crazy. And so we pull up, put the truck in park, and I'm like, guys, let's just pray. And we could kind of see the village, you know, starting to, and we're like, okay, let's just pray. Like, what do we do? Lord, you know, we're here. We've obeyed you. We've gotten to this point. Thank you. Like, I mean, we had spare tires and shovels and compressors and everything to get through this drive. And we show up. And we're praying, and while I'm praying, I get this word that, you know, like Jesus had compassion on them, for they were like sheep without a shepherd. That verse came up. And so I felt it, so I shared it with the guys, and they're just like, whoa. Like we're all feeling God's heart for this tribe. And as we're going back into prayer, there's this little tap on the window, and I look, you know, surprised somebody, I roll the window down. It's this beautifully dressed African woman, obviously not from the tribe, right? And I'm just like, and she goes in perfect English, "Hi, are you guys missionaries?" And we're like, "Yeah, we're from Canada." She's like, "Oh, I've been waiting for you."
Wow.
And we said, like, what? We didn't even know 12 hours ago that we'd wind up here. So we're like, "What do you mean?" And she says, "Oh, 6 weeks ago, I had a dream. And in my dream, God told me to get to Ukwi." That's the village we were in. And she lives on the other side of the country. And she said, I got some money from some friends and family. I gathered everything that I could. And it took me about 2 or 3 weeks to get here. I hitchhiked and bus and you name it. And I got here. And in my dream, I saw that, when God told me to get to Ukwi, I could see four white people and I knew I'd be serving alongside them. So she's like, "I've been expecting you."
Man.
And we're just like, wow, let's go. Like our minds, right? Like we were just blown away. And this is one of like 30 things that happened on that trip. But she spoke the language. She was our translator. We saw over 60 salvations. We saw many healings. We saw demons coming out of people. And we just proclaimed the gospel there. And they received it so quickly. And so we're going back in April, and she's staying till like December, January to just do all the follow-up and stuff. Like, what a blessing, what a gift. So we're going back and we're going to introduce baptism, and then we're going to train them on how to share the gospel amongst their own people. And we're going to start to identify leaders and get behind and build them up and just get them to carry on into that whole part of Africa where nobody's going.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible privilege when your truck gets stuck, when you blow a tire, when you break a tent peg, when everything just goes wrong, you run out of water, you don't know how. God always, always is ready, has a plan, and has gone ahead of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's so scriptural too, right? Just yeah. Therefore go, mm-hmm. And he'll meet you there. And that's a great example of trusting in the Lord too, that you guys lost both your translators, but you decided still to go.
Yeah.
And not knowing what would happen.
Complete unknown. Like, it seems absolutely ridiculously foolish.
Bro, I would have been, she told that story of the dream, I would have been bawling. I probably would have messed for like half of the day.
This trip was like, you know, out of the 40 some odd trips, this was among my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because of how miraculous it was. Like, we were walking on water. You know, and it's the Lord. Like, I'm convinced that 90% of missions is show up.
Yeah.
The other 10% is just figure out what God is already up to, get behind it and serve it.
Yeah.
That's it. He'll make it very obvious when you show up. All you got to do is get there. And that's actually fun. I maybe I'm broken or wired different, you know, I don't know, but like, I love the crazier, the hike or the boat or the risk or the, you know, the sleeping on the ground or the unknown. I love that stuff, but that's what it takes to get the gospel to the least reached on our planet. You have to do those things. You have to step out into unknown. We always have an itinerary, but it's always out the window by day two, you know?
Yeah.
But we go.
Yeah. Amen. Danny, so your ministry, Equip Canada, just what does your ministry, because you're providing for others, just share with the listeners what your ministry is all about.
Sure. So Equip Canada was started about 30 years ago, and it began as a training for missionaries that were going long-term into very difficult places. So a lot of practical training, which is still going on in our North Carolina campus. And but we also grew into a sending agency. So people will have a vision for their life, for their ministry, for their calling, and maybe it doesn't fit in with other organizations. And so what people are able to do with Equip Canada is they can present to us their sort of vision, their mission, their calling, their sense of what it is that they want to do. And we can help them sort of build it and tweak it. And then we can launch them. So we're, you know, really a bunch of apostolic, entrepreneurial, out of the box type ministries that just want to go and do crazy things for Jesus. And it's just a place where you're welcome. You got a seat at the table. Your calling may not make sense to everybody else, but we want to provide a place where people can come and say, this is what I feel God calling me to do. And so we've got missionaries that, you know, we're Canada's largest Bible distributor right now with Give the Word, and run by my good friend Ryan and Rob. Good friends. And we've got people working with farmers in South Sudan and Uganda. We've got a 400 child orphanage in Nigeria, which we're going to in January. And we've got people working with formerly exploited women. We've got people planting churches. We got people doing unreached, you know, people groups and anything and everything. You know, we've got a radio station out of Saskatchewan that's pumping into the Middle East. right now. Oh, and yeah. So lots of people have this, like, you know, ingenuitive. Is that a word? I don't even know if that's a word. But very apostolic, entrepreneurial, like I was saying, thinkers that just want to do something crazy to make a difference for the Lord. And Equip Canada just provides them a place where they can launch.
That's super good.
Yeah.
It's awesome how there's all these different, I mean, everybody has a different calling and stuff, and that there's resources and things that can help people move into that.
Yeah.
That's really good. So back to Botswana in April.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You want to come?
Bro.
Bring all this. Bring all this studio stuff. Bring your guitar. They'd love it.
Slug it all to Botswana.
Come on. Man, you know what? We're going to dig a hole, and we're going to... a friend of mine sent me a video of this missionary lady doing baptism amongst this tribe somewhere in Africa. And it just ignited me so much. And the Lord spoke to me, and he's like, you need to teach them about baptism. Because they live in the desert, baptism just isn't a thing.
So I was going to actually ask you that. How are you going to do baptism in the desert?
I don't know. We're going to figure it out.
You figure it out.
Either it's going to rain or we bring water, or, you know, we might have to introduce pouring. Maybe it's a thing we do over. We're praying about, you know, how the Lord would have us, but we're going to introduce baptism. And that way, when they share their testimony with the community, because the entire village will come, villages will come when we start that. They will come in massive numbers. Yeah. And they will be proclaiming the gospel to each other through their story, their testimony. And so we're going to introduce baptism and then begin training on, how, like I said, how to share the gospel. We're going to look and identify, which we've already began. We've identified some key leaders who are already stepping up and being like, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of reaching my people. So we're going to start pouring into them and just get behind what God is already doing there and just serve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. Danny, again, we are going to do this again because there's so much depth and richness. And I know when we first met, you were going to the Amazon, which is crazy, and just, you know, flying somewhere and then taking a boat and then hiking. And
yeah,
like, that's snakes and spiders with big teeth and hair.
Crocodiles.
Right?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So I'd love to actually do an episode just focusing on reaching the lost in those crazy places.
But sure.
I do have one more question for you, but guys, thanks for checking out this episode. Check out Equip Canada. The links will be in the description. Follow Danny. Danny posts when he's on these trips, and you can see some of the, you know, pictures of what's happening. And in April, we'll see some baptisms, Lord willing. I bet you it's going to rain. I bet you the Lord will bring an abundance amount of rain when you go there to baptize these
wild
people. And provide a way for you.
Mm-hmm.
But Danny, you just a final question for you. You had that moment, you were serving, you're just cleaning toilets and mopping floors.
Mm-hmm.
And you had an encounter with the Lord in a washroom of feeling his heart for the lost.
Yeah.
What does that look like for you today?
You know, it's the same. Like, it's been there since the very moment I met Jesus. There's just this sense of love for the world and a desire to see them know and encounter Christ. And, you know, I believe you can't draw near to the heart of God and not draw near to the mission of God, you know? And he said, I came to seek and save the lost. And you see, as Jesus moved about, he just wanted to bring the lost home, the prodigal son, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep, Zacchaeus, the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery. Like, it just, he just has this heart for people and for the lost. And so as you draw near to him, it has to translate. It's not just about, oh, I just feel so much peace and joy. And that's good. And that's all a part of it. But when you really go in deeper and you say to the Lord, here am I, send me. When you ask him, is there someone, like every day, Is there someone that's on your heart today that I'm going to encounter that I can bless? You know, you get involved in the mission. You know, you can walk into a Starbucks, which happened to me. You know, I walked into a Starbucks and every table was full. Every seat. There was nowhere to sit except for one seat was open with this one lady. And she noticed and she was like, hey, if you just want to share my table, I'm just working, but feel free. And I was like, cool. Like, it wasn't just, oh, okay, cool, I got a spot to sit and then just sit in my own world. It was like, what does God have for her? You know, what is this cool opportunity? So I started to engage her. I'm like, what are you working on? And she said, I'm a wedding planner. So I'm planning this couple's wedding. And I'm like, cool. And then she fell for it. Right. She's like, what about you? What do you do? And I said, well, I help people all around the planet who are far from God to be not far. And she was like, oh, that's interesting. She's like, are you a priest? I said, no, I'm not a priest. I'm just a follower of Jesus. Like, he changed my life. And so I just love telling people how they can encounter him. And I was like, listen, what's your name? And she goes, my name is Sharon. I said, Sharon, is there anything I could pray for you today? Like, if God could do a miracle in your life, what would it be? And she immediately starts to cry. Like, the tears just welled up. And she's like, I'm so sorry. She's like, can you just give me a second? And I'm like, yeah, what's going on? And she said, Danny, I'm 48 years old. And just this morning, I prayed for the first time in my life. And I said, God, if you're real, I need a miracle. And she said, and then I came to Starbucks and you came to my table and asked me that question. She goes, he's real. Isn't he? He's real. That means he's real. And I was like, yeah, he is. She's like, my mind is blown. And I'm like, me too. You know, like, I just love this, you know, but wound up leading her to Christ. And she got connected in with a church and a friend that she knew that goes there. And she's, you know, doing super well. And God's really taken her on a journey. But the thing is like, that's how we can and should operate every day, is just that readiness. You know, the shoes of peace are called being fit with the shoes of peace, with the readiness that comes with the gospel of peace.
Yeah,
there's a readiness that we should all have, that just every day when we wake up, it's like, I'm on mission. Doesn't matter if you're a teacher, an architect, a mechanic, a nurse, or whatever it is that you do, or a fireman, you know, should you be so cool, you know, there's a mission everywhere. People are people, you know, whether you're doing it full time or whether you're, you know, just living your life. We're all in full time ministry.
Yeah.
We're all called. We're all sons and daughters of the King, and we all have a ministry and a message, and we're his ambassadors no matter where we are. We're all in ministry.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's awesome, bro. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great to see you, man.
Yeah, I love you, man. I'm super thankful.
Love you, bro.
Thanks for having me.